the main campaigns that we put heaps of time and energy and effort into, in terms of like organizing, capacity building, resource and that sort of stuff, is fracking in the Northern Territory. So at the moment, oil and gas corporations have licenses over 70% of the Northern Territory, which is an unbelievable amount of like of country and an unbelievable amount of landmass. And for over 10 years, traditional owners right across the territory. So the Beetaloo Basin in particular is bigger than Sydney. Like this one area is bigger than Sydney. And we have a particular corporation that has a license that is literally twice the size of Tasmania, which is just like an unbelievable amount of space. But for 10 years, traditional owners have been saying, no, we don't want this. You have no consent. There is no free, prior and informed consent. And we have conservative governments from both major parties, I would argue they're both conservative, who, as I'm sure people are probably like fairly across, are pretty wedded to gas as an idea. But there's a couple of things in particular. I don't campaign on the climate, I campaign on consent, right? And traditional owners across the NT have repeatedly and persistently for 10 years said no, because they were not told of what the process would take, which is actually like, it's quite a violent process. They drill over 2 kilometres into the earth and pump it full of chemicals that have been known to cause cancer to basically explode the rock underground to suck out gas. And the particularly scary thing about the Northern Territory is it's quite a dry place, right? It's pretty dry. So 90% of the territory relies on underground bore water, and it's one big aquifer. And if they drill down and there's one spill, that's it for water across the territory. Without water, there is no survival. Like it's actually mind-boggling that this is something that anyone is persisting with in a process that has been banned in multiple places, including states here on this continent, has been banned as a process because it's so dangerous. So that's one of the things I work on. And the other major campaign that I work on is around cultural heritage. Folks probably saw last year the disaster that was Juukan Gorge, the absolute fucking tragedy, a 46,000-year-old sacred site being blown up for expediency by Rio Tinto. And that really cracked open a conversation that we haven't had as a nation in a very, very long time. Mm. I'd say probably not since the epic land rights movements that my family were part of in the 60s and 70s. So I consider this work a continuation of that legacy. But what happened in WA, as appalling and as shocking as it is completely legal and happens literally everywhere across this continent on a daily basis. Everything sits with ministerial discretion. So whether it's the WA legislation, Ben Wyatt, that's his name, signed off the explosion of Rio Tinto without consulting traditional owners. In New South Wales, where my mob are from, Wiradjuri mob, there have been 700 applications to stop the destruction of, over 700 applications to stop the destruction of sacred sites, and 5 have been approved. That is the scale of destruction of country and culture. And what I will say about that is that without country and without our sites, we aren't Aboriginal people. Our culture and our law and our custom all comes from that place that we are from. Ben Wyatt and WA, they're related. But Ben Wyatt's from the ALP. Sorry, just reading from the chat. So the protection and the preservation of country is pretty existential as blackfellas. So that's the space that I work in, as well as providing support to families who are running campaigns around Aboriginal deaths in custody.
We're learning just how horrible things are for First Nations communities in Western New South Wales, Wilcannia and other towns out that way. To what extent are similar communities in, Queensland and Northern Territory learning how to prepare for the inadequacies, if you like, of government bureaucratic support for dealing with the pandemic? Edie, your reflections on this?
So through my dad's side, I'm Wiradjuri, which means that my ancestral territories, my family are in Western New South Wales, particularly in Dubbo. So I'm feeling this on like a range of levels, including the fact that the first Aboriginal person to pass because of COVID is from my community. Like, it's been a very big week. I think that what is happening in Western New South Wales is an extension of the frontier wars. This feels like an act of genocide, and I don't want to sound like I'm really over the top, but 18 months ago, when our communities across Australia wrote to Ken White, wrote to the government, were like, okay, this is going to be a disaster when it gets in. Can we have beds? Can we have ventilators? Can we have adequate housing? They sent children-sized body bags to a community in the Kimberley. That was the government's response to help at the outbreak of this pandemic. Child-sized body bags. It is very difficult to try to understand this in any other way other than an act of state-sanctioned violence when that's the response. And what we've seen over the last week, as well as the health service out in Wilcannia, wrote very similar correspondence to Ken Wyatt 18 months ago. And yet here we are. We have communities who have 20 people in a two-bedroom house. How do you isolate? They're isolating in tents. They're predicting now that 1 in 5 Aboriginal people have COVID out there, which is phenomenal. And I think that there's a lot of roles that we can play in this. But one of the things that I would ask everyone listening to this is actually like, there's a lot of noise happening at the moment, right? Everyone's in lockdown. It's hard to get a vaccine. I don't know how I managed to get fully vaccinated, but thank God for that. There's a lot of noise happening at the moment, and it's really, really easy to drown out the fact that there is an oppressed, marginalized group of people who are absolutely staring down the barrel of being decimated right now in Western New South Wales. We're talking about, what is it going to take to lock down? No, what is it going to take for those people to survive this? And it's not living in tents, and it's not like people are celebrating because they got given the materials so that they could hunt roo, so that they could eat out there because there is no food in the community. That's not something to celebrate. It's not something to celebrate that they've sent 20 camper vans out to Western New South Wales. It is a tragedy and a crime that the housing doesn't exist already. And we need, like, we can't shift the spotlight off this. We can't on any way, shape or form, because this government will take any excuse that it can to bait and switch and pivot away to anything that's not to do with our mob. We need to be loud about it. And yes. I need people to be as angry as I am.